Underestimating her own importance was never one of Savarden's failings. And perhaps because she was tired of running from the world, from herself. Ready to give up. But I still didn't understand why I was with her. Of all the officers I've served with, she was never one of my favorites.
I trust you, she lied.
When I grab you, raise your armor and put your arms around me. Fresh alarm flashed across her face, but there was no more time. I extended my armor under my clothes and stepped off the bridge. The instant my hands touched her shoulders, the red glass shattered, sharp-edged fragments flying out and away, glittering briefly. Savarden closed her eyes, ducked her head face into my neck, held me tight enough that if I hadn't been armored, my breathing would have been impeded. Because of the armor, I couldn't feel her panicked breath on my skin, couldn't feel the air rushing past, though I could hear it. But she didn't extend her own armor. If I had been more than just myself, if I had had the numbers I needed, I could have calculated our terminal velocity and just how long it would take to reach it. Gravity was easy, but the drag of my pack and our heavy coats, whipping up around us, affecting our speed was beyond me. It would have been much easier to calculate in a vacuum, but we weren't falling in a vacuum. But the difference between 50 meters a second and 150 was, at the moment, only large in the abstract. I couldn't see the bottom yet. The target I was hoping to hit was small, and I didn't know how much time we'd have to adjust our attitude, if we even could. For the next 20 to 40 seconds, we had nothing to do but wait and fall.
Armor! I shouted into Savarden's ear. Sold it, she answered.
Her voice shook slightly, straining against the rushing air. Her face was still pressed hard against my neck. Suddenly, gray. Moisture formed on exposed portions of my armor and blew streaming upward. 1.35 seconds later, I saw the ground. Dark circles packed tight. Bigger, and therefore closer than I liked. A surge of adrenaline surprised me. I must have gotten too used to falling. I turned my head, trying to look straight down past Savarden's shoulder to what lay directly below us. My armor was made to spread out the force of a bullet's impact, bleed some of it away as heat. It was theoretically impenetrable, but I could still be injured or even killed with the application of sufficient force. I'd suffered broken bones, lost bodies under an unrelenting hail of bullets. I wasn't sure what the friction of decelerating would do to my armor, or to me. I had some skeletal and muscular augmentation, but whether it would be sufficient for this, I had no idea. I was unable to calculate just exactly how fast we were going, just exactly how much energy needed to be bled away to slow to a survivable speed, how hot it would get inside and outside my armor. And unarmored, Savarden wouldn't be able to assist. Of course, if I had still been what I once was, it wouldn't matter. This wouldn't have been my only body. I couldn't help thinking I should have let Savarden fall. Shouldn't have jumped. Falling, I still didn't know why I had done it. But at the moment of choice, I had found I couldn't walk away. By then I knew our distance in centimeters. 5 seconds, I said, shouted above the wind. By then it was 4. If we were very, very lucky, we'd fall straight into the tube below us, and I'd push my hands and feet against the walls. If we were very, very lucky, the heat from the friction wouldn't burn unarmored Savarden too badly. If I was even luckier, I'd only break my wrists and ankles. All of it struck me as unlikely, but the omens would fall as Amat intended. Falling didn't bother me. I could fall forever and not be hurt. It's stopping that's the problem.
3 seconds, I said.
Breck,
Save Arden said, a gasping sob.
Please.
Some answers I would never have. I abandoned what calculations I was still making. I didn't know why I had jumped, but at that moment it no longer mattered. At that moment, there was nothing else.
Whatever you do, 1 second, don't let go.
Darkness. No impact. I thrust out my arms, which were immediately forced upward, wrists and one ankle breaking on impact despite my armor's reinforcement, tendons and muscles tearing, and we began a tumble sideways. Despite the pain, I pulled my arms and legs in and reached and kicked out again, quickly, steadying us the instant after. Something in my right leg broke as I did, but I couldn't afford to worry about it. Centimeter by centimeter, we slowed. I could no longer control my hands or feet, could only push against the walls and hope we wouldn't be pushed off balance again and fall, helpless, head first to our deaths. The pain was sharp, blinding, blocking out everything except numbers. A distance, estimated. Decreasing by centimeters, also estimated. Speed, estimated, decreasing. External armor temperature, increasing at my extremities. Possible danger of exceeding acceptable parameters. Possible resulting injury. But the numbers were near meaningless to me. The pain was louder, more immediate than anything else. But the numbers were important. A comparison of distance and our rate of deceleration suggested disaster ahead. I tried to take a deep breath, found I was incapable of it, and tried to push harder against the walls. I have no memory of the rest of the descent. I woke on my back in pain, my hands and arms, my shoulders, feet and legs. In front of me, directly above, a circle of gray light. Save Arden, I tried to say, but it came out as a convulsive sigh that echoed just slightly against the walls.
Save Arden.
The name came out this time, but barely audible and distorted by my armor. I dropped the armor and tried speaking again, managing this time to engage my voice.
Save Arden.
I raised my head just slightly. In the dim light from above, I saw that I lay on the ground, knees bent and turned to one side, the right leg at a disturbing angle, my arms straight beside my body. I tried to move a finger. Failed. A hand. Failed, of course. I tried shifting my right leg, which responded with more pain. There was no one here but me. Nothing here but me. I didn't see my pack. At one time, if there had been a Rodchai ship in orbit, I could have contacted it easy as thought. But if I had been anywhere a Rodchai ship was likely to be, this would never have happened. If I had left Save Arden in the snow, this would never have happened. I had been so close. After 20 years of planning and working, of maneuvering, 2 steps forward here, a step backward there, slowly, patiently, against all likelihood, I had gotten this far. So many times I had made a throw like this, not only my success at hazard, but my life. And each time I had won, or at least not lost in any way that prevented me from trying again. Until now. And for such a stupid reason. Above me, clouds hid the unreachable sky. The future I no longer had. The goal I was now incapable of accomplishing. Failed. I closed my eyes against tears not brought on by physical pain. If I failed, it wouldn't be because I had ever at any time given up. Save Arden had left somehow. I would find her. I would rest a moment, recollect myself, find the strength to pull out the handheld I kept in my coat,
and call for help, or discover some other way to leave here. And if it meant I dragged myself out on the bloody, useless remains of my limbs, I would do that, pain or no pain, or I would die trying. Chapter 14. One of the three Mianais didn't even arrive at the VAR deck, but transmitted the code for my central access deck. Invalid access, I thought, receiving it, but stopped the lift on that level and opened the door anyway. That Mianai made her way to my main console, gestured up records, scanned quickly through a century of log headings, stopped, frowned, at a point in the list that would have been made in the 5 years surrounding that last visit that I had concealed from her. The other two of her stowed their bags in quarters and went to the newly lit and slowly warming VAR decade room. Both of her sat at the table, the silent colored glass Valskyan saint smiling mildly down. Without speaking aloud, she requested information from me. A random sample of memories from that 5 year span that had so attracted her attention, above on the central access deck. Silent, expressionless, unreal in a sense, since I could only see her exteriors, she watched as my memories played out before her visions, in her ears. I began to doubt the truth of my memory of that other visit. There seemed to be no trace of it in the information Anander Mianai was accessing. Nothing during that time but routine operations. But something had attracted her attention to that stretch of time. And there was that invalid access to account for. None of Anander Mianai's accesses were ever invalid, never could be. And why had I opened to an invalid access? And when one Anander, in the VAR decade room, frowned and said, "No, nothing," and the Lord of the Roch turned her attention to more recent memories, I found myself tremendously relieved. In the meantime, my captain and all my other officers went about the routine business of the day, training, exercising, eating, talking, completely unaware that the Lord of the Roch was aboard. The whole thing was wrong. The Lord of the Roch watched my esk lieutenants fencing over breakfast, 3 times, with no visible change of expression. One VAR set tea at the elbow of each of the 2 identical, black-clad bodies in the VAR decade room.
"Lieutenant On," said one Anander, "has she been out of your presence at all since the incident?"
She hadn't specified which incident she meant, but she could only have meant the business in the Temple of Ikt. "She has not, my lord," I said, using one VAR's mouth. On my central access deck, the Lord of the Roch keyed accesses and overrides that would allow her to change nearly anything about my mind she wished. Invalid, 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 one after another. But each time I flashed acknowledgement, confirmed access she didn't actually have. I felt something like nausea, beginning to realize what must have happened, but having no accessible memory of it to confirm my suspicions, to make the matter clear and unambiguous to me.
"Has she at any time discussed this incident with anyone?"
This much was clear. Anander Mianai was acting against herself. Secretly. She was divided in 2. At least 2. I could only see traces of the other Anander, the one who had changed the accesses she thought she was only now changing to favor herself.
"Has she at any time discussed this incident with anyone?"
"Briefly, my lord," I said, truly frightened for the first time in my long life. "With Lieutenant Skyot of Justice of Ente." How could my voice, One Var, speak so calmly. How could I even know what words to say, what answer to make, when the whole basis for all my actions, even my reason for existence, was thrown into doubt?